Since December of 2022, protests have overtaken Peru after a botched coup attempt and at least 55 people have died in the violence so far. Meanwhile, across the world in Iran, over 500 people have been killed in the growing revolt against a theocratic government. And in the past couple of years, countries and cities across the world have all erupted into flames. Hong Kong, Bulgaria, Belarus, and Venezuela all saw massive anti-government demonstrations. And this was just 2020 alone. On average, there were new anti-government protests every 4 days in 2020, and they've only gotten more common since. And it's not really hard to see why. People across the world have had their lives ruined by both the pandemic, years of recessions, rampant corruption, and political chaos, which are all the warning signs of an imminent collapse, a process which has already begun in the five countries we're going to be talking about soon. To get a look at what might be in store for these unlucky nations, we only need to look so far as Sri Lanka as a warning sign. You see, among the developing nations of South and Southeast Asia, Sri Lanka has been the hardest hit in recent years. Coming off the back of a bitter civil war, the government seemed hopeful that they could bring Sri Lanka into the future. They turned inwards, passing laws to focus the economy on making goods for domestic use, rather than exports. But more controversially, they took on massive amounts of debt in a grand rebuilding project. And at first, this seemed to work. In 2012, GDP growth rose to over 9% for the first time in years. But as exports fell, the economy faltered again and growth dropped. So the government tried taking on more debt, hoping to kickstart the economy with infrastructure projects and a flood of foreign money. But this failed as well. The economy still didn't pick up as the national debt grew to ludicrous proportions. And so in 2015, a newly elected government did little to stop the bleeding after their new economic plan failed to pass the parliament. Tax increases and other changes to the economy were only successful in keeping inflation under control, but it never solved the deeper problems. With economic growth continuing to fall, despite all of the government's attempts to reverse the decline, and with the government continually changing to fight this problem, this led to even more economic chaos as the country's plans to get out of the crisis got more and more confused. Slowly, the situation was becoming dire, and foreign debt rose to nearly 87% of the country's GDP. But when the country needed a break, they got another kick in the teeth instead, with COVID bringing the whole country to a standstill, cutting off all of their economic growth when the country needed it the most. Years of mismanagement brought the economy to its knees, and then COVID gave it the final coup de grace. And so in just 2 years, Sri Lanka burned through nearly all of their foreign currency reserves, from over $7 billion to just $250 million. And they were now importing $3 billion a year more than they exported, which was bleeding the country dry. Eventually, the Sri Lankan people had enough, with widespread protests erupting across the country. And all the attempts at a last-minute fix only made everything so much worse. The government tried to ban fertilizer imports to encourage farmers to use domestic products, but this led to massive crop failures and massive food shortages, which was then accompanied by massive inflation, spiking to over 50% as well as skyrocketing prices across the board. And so in May of 2021, the government defaulted on their debts and then promptly collapsed, with Sri Lankan society ceasing to function properly as fuel shortages led to nationwide bans and daily power cuts became the norm, causing the Sri Lankan president to eventually flee to Singapore and the new interim government only lasting 3 days before it was ousted by the people after they occupied the presidential palace.
People's power has won. Now we have forced these two leaders, President Gotabaya Rajapaksa and Prime Minister Ranil Wickremesinghe, they've agreed to resign. And that is a great victory for us.
And now today, the road to recovery looks long and arduous for the long-suffering citizens of Sri Lanka. Even with debt restructuring and foreign investment, it will take a very long time before the country can get back on its feet. Stagnating wages and high costs promise years of suffering, but in lots of countries, the chaos has only just begun. And if you thought Sri Lanka's government seemed ineffective and corrupt, just wait until we see Peru. Protests and riots have rocked the country ever since December when the president tried to dissolve parliament and then got removed from office. When he was arrested just days later, it only made everything so much worse. And of course, this isn't an isolated incident. Peru's own internal struggles have been bubbling away for years, and possibly the biggest problem is corruption. With high levels of economic growth and very low amount of debt, Peru has seen a major economic boom over the last 20 years. And whilst poverty rates have fallen because of this, they haven't fallen nearly enough. Pervasive and deeply set corruption has seen the majority of the spoils fall into the hands of the rich and powerful. Wealth residents of the capital Lima have seen all of the benefits, while the rest of the country has had to endure a 20% poverty rate. But corruption isn't just an economic problem, it has spread into every layer of Peruvian society. When it came to COVID, for example, Peru had the worst mortality rate in the world, and corruption meant that millions that should have gone to healthcare went towards bribes and kickbacks instead. And all of this led to the lowest rates of trust towards the governments in Latin America, only just behind Haiti. And it's these years of corruption that has choked Peru's rural regions and has made the people resentful. Meanwhile, in the capital, lots of people still supported the current regime and its centralized power. This divide has haunted Peruvian politics for years, but in recent years, the nations have only gotten more polarized. A string of election scandals, vote rigging, and Peru's classic corruption led to a political crisis that lasted for years, all building up to the 2021 election. Then, from seemingly out of nowhere, the left-wing politician, Pedro Castillo, gained a massive following by tackling the key issues of corruption and poverty. The first result was too close, leading to a separate runoff election for the presidency between between the two leading candidates. Castillo won that by an incredibly slim majority of just 50.13%.
Peru's electoral authority has finally named socialist Pedro Castillo as the country's next president. Castillo has won the election by a margin of nearly 44,000 votes, beating his right-wing rival Keiko Fujimori in the third bid for the presidency.
But even though he was now the president, he had no control over the government. The real power lies with Congress, which is still mostly made up of his rivals. Soon it became clear that Castillo couldn't deliver on any of his promises. Then he got caught up in a corruption scandal and failed to deal with the rising cost of Peru's poorest citizens. He was just another politician, it seemed. Seeing no other options, Castillo moved to seize power by dissolving Congress. But it was a desperate and ill-fated attempt. And after his cabinet members resigned and Castillo tried to flee to Mexico, he was promptly arrested, which eventually led to months of protests, which are still happening today. I mean, recently it's gotten so bad that Machu Picchu was closed indefinitely because of the violence. And for now, the government has been able to stay in power by fighting and killing the protesters. But if this chaos continues, it won't survive for very long. Even before COVID and the recessions, Peru was struggling to keep itself together. But these outside pressures have pushed Peru to the brink of collapse. Peru's government clearly doesn't have a mandate from the people. Instead, they're keeping control through violence and bloodshed. But before we continue, I want to tell you about the video sponsor Morning Brew. Morning Brew is a free daily newsletter delivered Monday to Sunday, getting you up to speed on business, finance, and tech news in just 5 minutes. And you see, before I subscribed to Morning Brew, I started my mornings aimlessly scrolling through my phone, watching mind-numbing content. But now with Morning Brew, I get a summary of relevant stories that are really informative. For example, when researching for this video, I learned that China recorded a population drop in 2022, its first in over 6 decades. Observers blame this on the high cost of parenthood, strict COVID lockdowns, and decades of restrictive one-child rule. And as a result of the country's aging population, funerals now outnumbered baby showers by about 850,000 since last year. And if this keeps happening, the rest of the world will feel the impact of this. Fewer workers in China could mean more expensive products for consumers globally, as well as a reduced demand for goods and services that the country sources from abroad. And it's clear when going over to Morning Brew that they are witty, relevant, and informative. It's a much better alternative to the dry, dense, and boring traditional news that so many of us are used to. So there's absolutely no reason not to subscribe to Morning Brew if you're interested in business, finance, or tech. It's completely free and takes less than 15 seconds to subscribe. So sign up for free by visiting morningbrewdaily.com/moon or by clicking the link in the description below. Myanmar gives us a window into what Peru's current problems could quickly devolve into if left unchecked. You see, ever since they wrestled with independence from the British, Myanmar has been under the yoke of a military dictatorship, and over the last few decades they have controlled Myanmar's government either indirectly or by force, smothering any democratic reforms wherever they spring up. And throughout this period, Myanmar's people have been given glimpses of real democracy, most recently in the 2020 election. Funnily enough, when people were finally given a choice, the pro-democracy party won in an absolute landslide, and so very quickly the military realized they were losing their grip on power. And so they played nice at first, telling the public that they would honor the constitution and step back from power. But after just a few months, a coup was underway. Black vans and armored cars moved in to arrest key members of the pro-democracy party, including the new president. And once they were in power, the new junta declared martial law, banned gatherings of more than 5 people, shut down social media, and announced a new emergency government. And needless to say, the people weren't all too happy about this. Immediately, protests erupted across the nation and in the largest cities, but the military cracked down hard, which is why after a few months of violence and bloodshed, the crowds eventually died down and disappeared. But the resistance hadn't gone away completely, it just moved underground. And ever since the coup, young freedom fighters have launched a guerrilla war from the jungles in the north. And this war is running alongside the junta's other military operations in the east, where it has been oppressing and massacring a Muslim minority called the Rohingya. You see, over the course of the coup, over 2,500 people have died at the hands of Myanmar's police and soldiers. And because of the resulting civil war, over 600,000 people have been forced to flee their homes. But this political violence overshadows other deep problems in Myanmar, like poverty. The junta is only able to keep themselves in power by impoverishing their people, a tactic which they perfected over decades of rule. This is why nearly half of Myanmar's people live below the poverty line, and this number is still rising. Meanwhile, the military junta have turned to other means to finance their wars. The junta have turned to opium to turn a profit, with their exports of the drug doubling in 2022. And you see, previously farmers were incentivized to grow other crops despite being less valuable, which is all amounting to a humanitarian disaster in Myanmar. And unless the people can overthrow the military dictatorship, things are only going to get so much worse. But that's unlikely to happen in the near future without significant international pressure, something which has been lacking in recent months. But to anyone watching, Myanmar is very close to collapse, and we can only hope that the government will break down before it can erode the will of the people. But whilst Myanmar's freedom movement seems to have calcified into a long war of attrition, Iran's democratic wave has only just gotten started. Similar to Myanmar, Iran has been under the thumb of a totalitarian regime for decades now. Ever since the late 70s after a violent revolution, Iran has been governed as an extreme theocracy. Women's rights were ground down to nothing, whilst a small majority of religious leaders took all the power for themselves. And over the years, this regime has become one of the most oppressive in the world by restricting basic rights and executing anybody that they want. Now, there have been some major protests in the past, but none of them were a credible threat to the regime's security. For example, in 2009, millions took to the streets to protest a rigged election, but the movement failed to gain any real momentum with the working class people. Then, in the late 2010s, more protests were held over major economic problems, but this time the middle classes weren't very engaged. It was only until 2022 that we finally saw a united front. Outrage over the killing of a 22-year-old woman in September for not covering her hair led to violence in the streets and the regime cracking down with lethal force. But this only incentivized more protests, and soon enough, every corner of the nation was lit up by the fires of the unrest. People from all walks of life took to the streets to protest the lack of women's rights in particular, alongside the government's other grievous crimes. Now, Iran hasn't been sluggish in their response either, doubling down on suppression, arrests, and murder. In total, the Iranian government has killed over 500 people in an effort to squash the protests. But right now, it's not really working. Protests are still going on internationally. It's even gone to the point where the former president is calling for Iran's government to give in to their demands. But the government doesn't just have a growing revolution on their hands, they're also surrounded by enemies on all sides. Bitter relations with the West, among many other things, have made Iran an international pariah. They've been under heavy sanction for years, which has severely restricted the country's economy. COVID also played its own part, of course, and now the protests have seen social media shutdowns across the nation, and this will affect tons of businesses which rely on the internet to market themselves. On top of this, they've been in a cold war with Saudi Arabia for years, who want nothing more than to topple the Iranian government. Now, it's a question of survival for Iran, but they won't go down easily. And even if the regime does fall, it doesn't necessarily promise a brighter future. A regime change in Iran would be incredibly likely to lead to civil war and chaos. We've already seen the protests take its course in Libya and Syria, but for lots of Iran's people, it's a risk worth taking. However, by looking at all these different countries, it's clear that COVID and economic pressures have pushed all of these corrupt regimes to the brink. But our last country is being faced with a different threat: water shortages. What should be a historical problem is set to become one of the largest issues of the 2020s, and no country knows this better than Egypt. For the past year in Egypt, the country has been incredibly dry, and there's already droughts all over the world. But you see, in Egypt, the problem is so much worse. 95% of Egypt's 102 million people live next to and depend on the River Nile, and Ethiopia right now is damming it up at the source, with their new mega dam only recently being built, and it's still getting expanded upon today. Sudan, which once acted as a buffer between Ethiopia and Egypt, has also been swayed to Ethiopia's side on the matter. And so once it's finished, Ethiopia will have full control over Egypt, being able to turn off their economy and put their people in danger at will. The dam could plunge the country into famine. It would take an ironclad regime to survive this existential threat without collapsing, and Egypt's current government is far from that. Ever since the military government took power in a coup 10 years ago, they've been on shaky ground, desperately trying to turn the economy around. And to do this, they took out massive loans, but it was never enough. And so like Sri Lanka, more and more loans kept coming in, but as creditors got nervous, the interest rates skyrocketed. And then the hole continued to get deeper, and now they're dealing with over $50 billion in debt to foreign creditors, triple what it was in 2013. And all of this has left 60% of Egypt's population close to or under the poverty line. They won't be able to take much more, and most blame the military government. Their tight control of the economy has stunted it, placing it in a terrible debt spiral. And harsh cuts to public spending have made people's lives measurably worse, and yet nothing has been done to stop the crisis, with the government even spending sorely needed funds on vapid mega projects like a new capital. Although this is a ploy to give the regime a more secure base away from the crowds that toppled the last one, it's not even close to completion yet, despite the massive amounts of money that have been thrown away. And new promises of foreign bailouts announced last month came with few conditions for economic reform, meaning they only promise a delay to impending economic chaos. And with inflation at 20% annually, and this figure rising, it remains to be seen how an extra few billion will solve the problem. And all of this is now putting Egypt's relatively new autocrat in an incredibly fragile position. And if these problems go unchecked, Egypt's government will completely collapse. COVID, recessions, climate change, and corruption are the main issues of today, and being unable to deal with these massive modern problems is a common factor between all of these countries. It's almost a certainty that at least one of these countries will collapse under the pressure in the next year, if not more of them. And this is by no means an exhaustive list. Tons of other countries around the world are in a similar position, but as each domino falls, it will push the next ones over as well. Each collapse will then drive millions of people across international borders, weakening all of the countries affected as they deal with the humanitarian crisis. And history tells us that even if one corrupt regime is ousted, it's often just replaced with another one. Knowing this, it can be easy to be pessimistic, but there is still light at the end end of the tunnel. The fact that so many people around the world are protesting and trying to throw off their oppressors is a sign that the winds are changing. And it's only in crisis that corrupt regimes find themselves in fear of losing their grip on power. And whilst the world may be getting worse before it gets better, there's hope that it will be much more free once the dust is cleared.